The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 10th of November, 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show, and plenty coming up between now and 12 to keep you informed and entertained, I hope. But we kick off, as we do every Friday, though, with our Friday panel. And we have three guests, some in studio, some joining us remotely to discuss some of the big stories of the week and the day. Just to remind you, you can watch the programme, if you wish, on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. That's via the smart TV, your Fire Stick, or across your mobile devices. And we're also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Okay, we'll say good morning first to Breed Curran. Good morning, Breed.
Good morning. Good morning, Greg. I'm hoping you can hear me. Good.
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me okay?
Great. Great, absolutely fine.
Okay. We're also in the company of Nicholas Crossan. Nicholas, are you there? Good morning to you. Multitasking there, Nicholas, never a good idea. Okay, well, I'm getting feedback too, actually. Maybe I might kick you all out and bring you back in, if that's okay. Also in studio with us is Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, community campaigner. Good morning to you, Doreen. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping good, Greg. Good morning.
It's good to have you in studio with us.
Thank you very much.
We've an awful lot to talk about. We're going to bring our other guests back in when we see if we can alleviate that feedback problem. But what I'll start with you, Doreen, is the family of Aisling Murphy have said she was subjected to incomprehensible violence, and it's imperative that this vicious monster can never harm another woman again. Speaking with emotion on the steps of the Criminal Courts of Justice, where Slovakian native Josef Puska was found guilty of her murder less than 2 hours ago, they said Aisling was the epitome of a perfect role model for every little girl to look to and strive to be. Some 18 women have been killed violently in Ireland since Ms. Murphy's death, with calls for Irish society to urgently prioritise ending violence against women. It is something we seriously need to reevaluate.
I think it's wonderful to see the media giving it the coverage that it deserves. And I think for the family, this must be an awful time, and yet maybe a stepping stone towards moving on as well. That I'm glad this issue is in court, and I'm glad it's come to this decision. And I think they were very happy as a family yesterday that you know, things went the way they went. And I just think it's awful. And that's what we're hearing about. We're hearing there's 18 deaths in relation to women. And what are the reasons behind that? And what support is out there? Is there funding being made available to these different organisations that are trying to help women? Are women going for help? Are they not getting it? And just the Aisling herself, being from the background of education and the wonderful road and journey that was ahead for her, and for her life to be taken off in the manner in which it was taken, was just awful. And there's no words that can console her family. And I believe the mum held up a picture of her yesterday as she left on the courthouse steps. It's just tragic, and it just doesn't bear, you know, thinking about. But also, we have to think today in our own county, the tragedy of the two young people that have been buried this morning, and to the Inishowen community, you know, to offer on behalf of anyone we know the sympathies. Two lovely young lives been taken from us, and it's just also we're in the wake of the 9th of November. It commemorates the death of our Arnmore people in the Arnmore disaster. So there's a lot of grief out there, and I hope people are talking to people, and I hope they're getting help, and I hope the supports are out there for them.
Yeah, indeed, and an awful lot covered there. We are with Breed Curran, solicitor. I was just putting it to you as we reconnected, and there is a little bit of feedback, but I think we're going to have to work through that. That we had the conviction yesterday, the conviction yesterday of Josef Puska, Breed. And since the tragic death of Aisling Murphy, 18 women have been killed violently in Ireland. And I was putting it to Doreen Sheridan that this is something as a society that we really need to prioritise, isn't it, in ending violence against women?
Absolutely. As a family law practitioner, I've noticed, particularly since COVID, I think lockdown exposed an awful lot of issues with regards to women's safety and domestic violence in particular. I think lockdown exposed an awful lot of cracks in either people's personalities or people's relationships. And we really need to get to grips with providing safe places for women and children in particular. Now, I'm not taking away from the fact that there are men who are also victims of domestic violence, but in particular, women need safe places. They don't have that financial independence that men sometimes have. Maybe they're at home looking after children. We need to increase the number of places in refuges around the country for women who are victims of domestic violence. And we need to put in place this this age-old tradition of, you know, turning a blind eye. What goes on behind somebody's closed doors is none of our business. You know, we need to ask questions of people. Are you okay? Are you all right? And that is a mindset that we simply have to change.
What's the role for men in all of this, do you think, in you know, if you see it, call it out? No, because we can't just keep talking about this. We have to sort of try and find out how we get to the bottom of this.
We certainly do. I mean, you know, lads standing around the bar on a Friday night joking and laughing about this, that and the other. And it takes a very brave fella to stand up and say, well, you know, you can't talk about a woman like that, or you can't, you know, stand here at the bar and brag about how you treat your spouse, or, you know, demeaning comments, or even men who know, and there are men out there who know that their friends are abusing women, either physically or verbally. And it takes a very strong man to stand up and say, you can't talk about somebody like that. And, you know, it all starts back really with education and our teachers teaching our young people in school how to treat members of the opposite sex and how to have respect for others and how to deal with others in a respectful manner. And I know my own daughter has started college in Maynooth, and one of the first things that they had there was a lecture on consent and respect. And that's really, really important that our educators are having those conversations with our young people, because that's where it starts.
Yeah. And listen, there has been quite a lot of commentary from some men in relation to this awful crime committed. And it seemed to be focused on the fact that much of it seemed to be focused on the fact that Josef Puska is a Slovakian native. We need to see that same level of, I think, vocabulary and speaking out, regardless of the background of a man.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It doesn't matter what nationality he is. The man is a convicted criminal and a murderer. The one thing I do want to make a point about, and I'm glad you brought it up in relation to this, is there's been quite a lot of speculation and discussion online on social media about whether he was entitled to the level of legal aid and representation that he had. It is so important in this country. You know, a lot of people were saying, you know, he shouldn't have been on legal aid and he shouldn't have been represented and he shouldn't have been allowed to run the defence that he did. It's really important in this country that we have a well-financed and very well-supported legal aid system, because regardless of his guilt, he is entitled to the presumption of innocence. You know, I recently represented a young man who was accused of defilement, and a lot of people say, you know, how can you represent somebody that, you know, may or may not be innocent? Well, that's the point. They may or may not be innocent. And it could be your son, it could be your daughter, it could be any member of your family who is accused of a crime. And they deserve a well-funded and well-represented legal aid system to support them in that. And yes, it's very, very hard for people to sit and watch and hear Judge Hunt charge the jury saying, you have to come at this from the point of view that he's innocent until the facts otherwise find him guilty. But it is really, really important that legal aid system is there, and that everybody in the country, regardless of who they are, where they're from, what their finances are, have a system to represent them, and that legal aid is there to provide that system. And I'm glad that the government has gone some way towards restoring the cuts. I think we were the last solicitors and barristers were the last people to have the FMP cuts restored, and they've gone some way towards restoring those cuts. I mean, I think we're back now at 2007. Or eight levels, but it is important that everybody, regardless of where they're from, who they are, has a legal system that represents them and gives them full representation.
Okay, I want to ask you a further question on that, but Nicholas Crossan has rejoined us. And as I say, Nicholas, there might be some reverb. It's just on someone's connection, but hopefully we'll be getting through it. And I'll just put it through to you, as I did our two other guests, that we are talking about the conviction of Josef Puska for the murder, the brutal murder of Aisling Murphy. And I was pointing to the fact that since her tragic death, 18 women have died violently in Ireland. And this has led to calls for an urgent prioritisation to end violence against women. And I think that's something everyone would back up. But we just need to see how that might look, I think, Nicholas.
Greg, I'm getting terrible feedback.
We'll switch you to the phone. That's all right. I can I can understand how distracting that can be. No, it's okay. I think it might be Breed's connection in some way causing that. But anyway, it'll be fine. We'll come back to that. Do you want to follow up, Doreen?
To what Breed says, because Breed has the brief on this and knows exactly what she's talking about. It's an area that I wouldn't be that well versed on. But this idea that maybe we're labelling because it's a foreign national that's gone to court on this, you know, but I know of instances in this county where it's Donegal men have been the people who are victimising, who are involved with the abuse of foreign women who are living in Donegal. And the big issue there is finance and support for the women and interpreters for them in court. And, you know, there's a huge issue there that needs to be addressed. And I think you're right, Breed, in relation to the funding that needs to be there. We need more spaces, we need more places, and we need a lot of HSE support for, as you say, both sides until people are proven to be innocent or guilty, as the case may be.
Yeah, indeed. And Breed, if you don't mind, I might just ask you to mute your microphone just when you're not speaking, if that's okay. But you are going to be speaking, so stay with me for a second, because I think your computer's creating a loop there. So I'll just put it to you, if that's okay, Breed, or maybe that's not the problem at all. One thing I have noticed is the, and his name escapes me at the moment, the person who was responsible for defending Josef Puska during the trial, he was identified and he was named and shamed in inverted commas effectively. How dangerous is that in terms of how law works? Right, okay, we'll come back to Breed in a second because I muted her. We'll be having a quick break. My apologies for the slight... Well, Breed, you can respond to that now, can you?
Yes. Yes, I can, yeah. I'm aware of the barrister, Mick Bowman, one of the most talented younger senior counsels in the country. At the end of the day, this man is doing his job. He's entitled to... he's mandated to take instructions from his client. I've often taken instructions from clients and have counselled them that the defence that they intend running is not a good defence, it's not a solid defence. But at the end of the day, we have a job to do, and no member of the legal profession should be called out for representing someone who ultimately turns out to be guilty. Because unfortunately, sometimes innocent people are tried for crimes they did not commit. And if it's the case that we're picking and choosing who we can and can't represent on the basis that they may or may not be innocent or guilty, then the criminal justice system is going to collapse. We have to be able to have the confidence in the criminal justice system to say that if Joe Bloggs is charged with the crime, he will get a fair trial, he will get really good representation, and that the public will have the confidence to know that if he is found guilty, then he is guilty. And if it is found that he is innocent of the charges, then he is innocent. And if we start saying, well, that man shouldn't be representing Josef Puska because he's clearly a criminal, then we can forget about a criminal justice system that serves the people of this country properly.
Yeah, and it's a really critical point, and actually I think it's really good that you as a solicitor happen to be on the panel today to address that. Okay, we'll be back with more from our guests after this break. Thank you for your comments, by the way, just to invite them in. Not down to educators at all. Most learned behaviour comes from the home, not school. What about the toxic women who use violence or even false accusations of abuse to attack males? Seems to be one-way traffic on this show. Women good, all men bad. But Doreen, like, I get that and we expect that comment to come through, but that's clearly not what we're talking about here. And I think Breed somewhat anticipated this a little earlier on in saying that, of course, you know...
I refute that. I said that I know of men who are victims of domestic violence, and I mentioned that, so...
Exactly, but I don't think it helps us, Breed. No, I don't think it was against you. I think it was against the programme as a whole. It does come in when we talk about violence towards women. But, Doreen, that's just distracting, really.
Well, it is, but then obviously...
18 women who have been violently killed. I don't think comparing that...
Well, maybe something needs to be done to promote the violence against men, and maybe they haven't got the statistics, maybe they haven't got the facts, but there's no way we were excluding them on this debate, and there's no way the programme was doing that. But perhaps the person who has this worry and concern should get in contact with the proper HSE, whatever, and let's try and work towards that.
Yep.
But no way was the programme in any way trying to, shelve it.
Okay, Nicholas, I know you didn't get much of that conversation for technical reasons. My apologies in relation to that. Do you have a comment on it, or do you want to move on to the next topic?
Just a very short comment. I could hear what Breed was saying very, very clearly at the outset. And I do believe it. Like, we in Ireland, we must have due process. And sometimes we get carried away with a trial by media. And people form their own opinions. But I think that we certainly have to rely on the justice system in Ireland. And I think we have a good justice system. And everybody is entitled to a fair trial. And that would be my comment on it. You know, we'll probably form our own opinions when reading newspapers or listening to the radio, whatever the case may be. But I think we have to go through due process and a fair trial for everybody.
And God knows we know all about unfair trials and what have you in this country, don't we? We're in the company of Councillor Nicholas Crossan, who's an independent councillor in the initial municipal district, Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, a community campaigner, and Breed Curran, who is also a solicitor. It was claimed this week by the INTO that banning mobile phones in schools is just a distraction, really, from the real crisis in the education sector as we face into a shortage of 2,000 primary school teachers. Those were the words from the head of the INTO. Can you see where John's coming from, Doreen? That, I mean, every day this week, and we were part of it, but I suppose we have to talk about what's current as well. Every day this week, all the talk was about mobile phones in schools, discouraging parents from buying them, yet at the same time, 800 primary school vacancies at the moment, and we're looking into 2,000. Surely that's the big issue that should be...
Well, I was glad to see Highland Radio cover that, and you do give very good coverage to John Boyle in the INTO with his connections in Donegal. However, I listened to Matt Cooper last night, the wee clip that he had in relation to the launching of this particular letter. That's all this is, a letter from the Minister of Education going to Boards of Management to ask them to inform parents about the dangers of it all. There's no funding. We're not talking about resources here. We're not talking about bringing in speakers from the HSE and from the various people who maybe could talk to parents and children from third class up. That's what's going on in schools. I'm out of schools 5 years, but 10 years ago in Illustrin we had people coming in explaining how dangerous cyberbullying was and the effect it can have on children. So she'll not be on my Christmas list. I can't believe that she's getting away with actually launching something that is only a letter, no funding, no backup, and it's a massive problem. I think in actual fact she should be thinking about funding, because when you come to secondary schools as regards, they're nearly required to have a smartphone because they want to be able to access Google Classroom and order to do homework and various things like that. So there needs to be an educated and a much broader issue on this. There nearly needs to be a directive. There might need to be a circular on it, but to come out with a letter and that's all that's been offered is wrong. I think she's missed the posse on this. I think she's a wee bit late. I think schools are doing fantastic work, but maybe that there's a link that she doesn't realise that what is going on really in our schools. Funding for the Board of Management, funding for parents' associations to give talks and to let parents know, because it's parents this is aimed at. It's not the staffs in schools. It's not the curriculum in schools. Parents, they do great work in schools in relation to cyberbullying and various things. There are days set aside. There are websites given out there to parents about what to do. But at the end of the day, the problems that are happening at home in relation to the internet, whether it's on, whether it's Facebook or all the various Instagrams and various things like that, it's coming back into the school. You could spend 2 days trying to solve a problem because one comment was made by one child about another. So it's very dangerous. Parents as well have to be, very conscious of what they write on maybe parent association websites in relation to schools. So there's a whole big issue out there that needs to be addressed. So maybe a circular on it would be more in line.
Yeah, well, that's maybe effective what we're talking about. Nicholas Crossan, as I say, you know, the INTO, John Ball, believing this is a bit of a distraction from the big issue. You know, massive shortage of teachers in our schools. Not so much in this part of the world as others, but we're not immune to it either. And then, of course, SETs being taken away from their important duties, and it has a knock-on effect. So the INTO want the government to incentivise teachers back into the workplace. But the initial question to you is this a distraction, or is this an important issue that the government's focused on at the moment?
Well, I think there's two issues in it. The shortage of the teachers is a huge issue. There's no doubt about that. Banning of mobile phones is a totally different topic. Mm-hmm. But some might see it as a solution to a different issue. But I think that I don't think they should be linked, or one should overshadow the other. So when children are dropped off to school in the morning, the parents and teachers, they're going into a safe environment. If a child has a mobile phone, the teacher or the parents, we're not aware of the activity that may be going on that phone, positive or negative. I think there are advantages for mobile phone, mm-hmm. as Doreen alluded to there, and maybe in secondary schools where there's educational apps and a lot of information that can be grasped by them. But the inappropriate use of for social media or cyberbullying, recording of children or teachers mm-hmm. in the classroom, I think there's a big argument, a big debate to be had. Between the banning of phones and the shortage of teachers, as I said, is a total.
It is, but we're talking about different problem. It is, I know, but I mean, if we were I think the point being, we should be as more exercised about one that actually is harming children and that we're not teaching. But I do take your point. I do take your point. Breed, Corinne, what do you believe?
Mobile phones and smartphones in particular have no place in a school. And the issue, unfortunately, is that what happens outside the school gates with regards to, as your other contributor had said there, Doreen, you know, throwaway comments on Facebook and Instagram and all this sort of thing, then has a knock-on effect about what happens in school. And I think parents and educators need to get together and sing off the one hymn sheet with regards to particularly our primary schools. That, you know, I mean, as parents, we're constantly looking after and looking out for our children and physically making sure that they're okay, collecting them, bringing them here, there and everywhere in the car rather than letting them go. And yet they have in their pockets something that's absolutely more dangerous than any predator that, who could be stalking them physically. You know, as the mother of a 19-year-old, I'm very aware of exactly what's out there on your mobile phone and on your smartphone. And I think as parents and as educators, we need to be a lot more alert to what is going on with our children, particularly on smartphones. And I'm 100% behind the decision of the Department of Education. I'm just, like Doreen, I'd prefer if they gave a little bit more resources to it, but I appreciate budgets are tight and all of that.
All right, okay.
But we really, really need to keep smartphones out of primary school.
Thank you very much.
And out of primary children's hands.
Yeah, indeed. And I think what this does, and we've talked about it in the programme, it's difficult for parents and guardians. This probably helps with the argument. Do you know what I mean? It's like teenage school discos.
Oh, absolutely.
Parents let their children go, but they prefer if they weren't happening so they didn't have to have that conversation.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, a lot of schools have some good policies in all of this. You know, the children do have to have phones because you have to contact. You might be going to granny's because of the setup of families and the different kind of families that we have. And, you know, there's no reason why a phone can't be left in an office and picked up as you're leaving school. There are things that can be done within schools to facilitate all this. But let's not underestimate about, let's go back to the point that John Boyle was making to you. There are shortages in schools of subs, even in Donegal, big time. There should be more positions made available, you know, to have someone in the base school that can cover these substitutions. And, you know, there are huge issues out there. Cost of living, you refer to, and various other restraints on teachers. So we need to be careful. We need to move on also and bringing in, you know, the way we have a new population coming into Ireland, and a lot of them are very qualified. There are a lot of barriers there for not allowing them to teach in Ireland.
Yeah,
so let's keep, you know, I know they're working on something now in St. Pat's and all and Mary Eye. So So let's hope
John
that Boyle that
made
continues.
A really interesting point in relation to that is that if a teacher goes away for 5 or 6 years, say, to work in Dubai or wherever it might be, we always use the same examples, don't we? That if they come back to Ireland, they're back to square one in terms of their career progression. I mean, that's a simple thing, really, they should be looking at, isn't it? That experience is recognised when they return into the Irish education system.
The experience that they have abroad.
Yes.
Yeah, well...
Because they're starting at the bottom of the pay scale then, effectively. Not
well,
the bottom.
Well, they're missing out, all right. But, you know, when you work abroad and you have your years, it does count on your pension. Okay. And also, I'm not sure...
Not your pension,
but the clarity
your,
of that, you know.
Your pay grades and what
have you. But then the fact that you've gone abroad, you've decided that's the education system you want to be part of, you know, and that's their choice. So you need to be careful and look into that before you do anything like that. But we'd like to have our teachers at home. We'd like to have a lot of them come back. But they're coming back with great experience too. And if it's what they want to do and it gets them started, it gets them on a level of education that is good. What's happening out abroad in the teaching is very, very good. I had a daughter went to Spain to teach, and the experience that she got, and it was just unbelievable. So you can't, you know, just because they're going abroad and maybe they're not coming back in and at the same level, that's a choice they made themselves.
Yeah, but Doreen, the point being is with emigration now, some of it is choice. Some of it is that I can't live here. I can't certainly work in Dublin and feed myself or save for a house. I mean, that's not a choice then to move somewhere else. You know, that's a compulsion. So we don't want to, I don't think, we don't want to conflate, do we, those
okay,
that
I do understand.
Feel obliged to go versus those that choose to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of them choose to go, to be quite honest, and I have a lot of friends who are abroad, but I also have a lot of people in Dublin who are getting jobs because there are jobs in Dublin.
There are,
I mean?
Of course.
There
yeah.
are jobs
no
in
houses,
Dublin.
Though.
There are no houses, but then there's no houses for anybody. So it's a big issue that the government has, and yet they're up to date with the houses that they promised they would.
Go ahead, Breed.
Sorry, Breed.
There is also the argument that, you know, the Department of Education could consider giving a waiting for those, a financial bonus for those who do work in Dublin or on the East Coast where there are particular shortages. That they would get an accommodation allowance, for example, the same way maybe somebody would get an allowance for working in choosing to work in a Gaelscoil. The department need to look at that with a view to encouraging younger people to stay in Dublin. But the problem then is, where do we house them? And anecdotally, there's lots of stories of principals in Dublin offering jobs to young people to work in Dublin, that they'd accept the job and then can't find somewhere to live, so they take a school down in Clare or wherever, Donegal or wherever, because they have a better chance of getting housing there. It's you know, the government really needs to look at the housing situation from the point of view of not just housing those who need housing who are homeless, but those who are technically homeless because they cannot afford to live in urban areas.
And Breed, it can't be ignored either when you were talking earlier on about what we need to do to assist women in dangerous situations. Yeah. One of the biggest challenges actually is, and it feeds into the housing crisis and access to housing. An awful lot of things kind of come back to the same.
Yeah, but in fairness now to the INTO, you know, and to people listening, you know, the INTO have fought for years for to have alliances for teachers who are in various places. I know when I worked in Ardmore Island, there was a Gaelic alliance to be teaching in an island. You know what I mean? So they're always out there trying to look for the various things, and I'm sure that's on their agenda as well. I wouldn't like to think that that's lying quiet. John Boyle won't let that go. He is fighting tooth and nail to get better allowances for teachers in the different parts of the country that they're working in.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose, Nicholas Cross, if we're talking about allowances for teachers working in Dublin, what about allowances then to try and encourage people to come and work in Letterkenny University Hospital? If it applies to teachers, could it then apply to guards, consultants, doctors, nurses? You know, where does it end? I presume that's the concern the government might have.
Well, suppose in an ideal world, we would have everything, but, you know, we have to cut our cloth. To the amount that we have, or we're suit to whatever amount of cloth we have. I agree that it is going to be very, very difficult for the major urban areas, Dublin, Cork and Galway, to attract teachers in because of the high cost of living, not alone even the accommodation on it, the cost of living in these city centres. We're always saying that Donegal is a great spot to live and to work and to earn in. So, where do we start? Where do we start? Where do we stop? We must make it attractive for people to come. And it's not, and I do believe that the teachers, it's a vocation for teachers to go into jobs like that, no more than doctors or nurses.
I don't think they like you saying that, though.
Well, I don't,
Nicholas,
where did you get that idea from?
Well, I've spoken to a couple of teachers and nurses, and they say, right, well, people thinking our career choices or a vocation is maybe why we don't get properly rewarded, because they think we're doing it because of a love and a passion.
Not for a second would I even insinuate that, but I'm just saying that there are people who are trained, and for myself, that I spent an awful lot of time in Letterkenny Hospital, I would have the greatest admiration for nurses and the work that they do.
Nicholas. Yeah, I'm not saying you don't.
For my past teachers as well, that, you know, you must, if you really, really love a job, and you know a teacher that really loves a job is a very good teacher, and everybody speaks about them, you know what I mean? And to me, but a fair pay for everybody across the board has to be taken on, but we're being realistic. We don't live in an ideal world. But it's something that I think is a good idea, maybe for the urban cities that, or the urban centres, that the special pay package could be put on to alleviate the problems of the rental.
Bree, did you want to come back in there before the break?
Just in relation to, I was just finding it difficult to hear Nicholas there, I'm afraid. It's just in relation to incentives to doctors and teachers, is it?
No, that's fine. No, we could leave it there. No, I threw that spanner in the works. As I say, we've a lot of balls in the air this morning, so we're struggling through here. It's technically, I can't emphasise enough how stressful this is, but we are getting through the programme. Thank you so much so far. From Councillor Nicholas Crossan, Independent Councillor in the Innishow Municipal District, we're listening to Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, Community Campaigner, and of course, a regular guest on the show as well, Breed Curran, a solicitor. We'll be back with more from our guests after these. Breed, I might just put this to you once again. I know you did address it, but just whilst I have you here in your experience, a number of people texting along the same tone, and I'll read from Devlin on social media. How can anyone of intelligence educated in the legal system in good conscience represent a blatantly guilty party?
Because that's our job. Everybody is entitled to the presumption of innocence. Everybody is entitled to due process. It's exactly the same as somebody who, you know, works in Tesco's or works as a nurse in a hospital. They're going out to do a job. That's what we're trained to do. You have to be professional enough to put aside your own personal ideas or park any judgment that you have in relation to somebody. Your caller or your contributor there, I'd say if his son or daughter was accused of a crime, say, for example, dangerous driving causing death, wouldn't they like to think that their child would have the same representation as someone, as anyone, and entitled to that representation, no matter what, regardless of whether they were innocent or guilty, that they have an opportunity to have a jury or a judge decide on their guilt or innocence in a fair and impartial manner, using a solicitor who puts aside any judgment that they have, or a barrister who puts aside any judgment that they have, so that the legal system works. And our legal system does work. Now, sometimes, unfortunately, and God knows in Donegal we know all about it, about people who are unfairly accused and who don't get an impartial and fair hearing. But I would just ask that person to think about whether their child or their son or their daughter or their any relation of theirs were accused of a crime. Wouldn't they like to think that they would get a fair and just trial with due process observed?
Yeah, okay. Listen, thank you very much for that. Right. New restrictions to be rolled out for e-scooters will ban their use by anyone under the age of 16 after a U-turn by the Transport Minister following lobbying over road safety concerns. Eamon Ryan told the Dáil Transport Committee in June that any plans to restrict the use of e-scooters by age would be unenforceable. But there are rules and regulations coming in. They'll effectively be treated like electric bicycles. There'll be some more restrictions if they're over a certain wattage. But we've been listening during the week from people out and about, Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, who are walking from their car into a shopping centre in a private car park, nearly getting cleaned out of it, up and down footpaths. And yet, at the same time, particularly in an urban area, they are a very useful means for people to get to and from work or college, particularly in the absence of public transport. But what's your view about the regulations?
I welcome it, and I think it's about time. I'm a bit concerned that I saw a case was mentioned locally in the media that someone was going to be charged as a result of what happened. And if there's no legislation in, I don't think they should be going back on that. We can bring the legislation in, and after that, then things can be enforced. I had a son in London who, like that, came out of his office one day and was just taken from, and lucky enough that he managed to fall the way he did, ended up in hospital. I know a local man, Letterkenny, and you had him on the airways here. And I think it can be manned, because if you can man a 16-year-old driving a tractor from here to the top of Fannet, you can man people on scooters. If it's a motorised, and I think it had to be legalised because of the dangers. And I'm glad that it's come this far. And I'm glad that people lobbied in that regard, because without the lobbying to, you know, and even Helen McEntee herself, I said, had to listen to a lot of people and listen to a lot of groups.
But just in relation to that, about the banning of under 16s, like, you know, say, for instance, for some families, it might be a short trip from home to school and they're out on a push bike, right? Yeah. Is it a big difference for a 13-year-old to be going to and from, you know, active travel to, and I know it's not terribly active on a scooter, but to be going from their home to school?
Oh, yeah,
shop,
yeah,
is it a big difference between the bike and the scooter?
Yes, Greg, it has a huge difference. It's a motorised, you know, we're talking about. So therefore, I don't think they have control about what they're doing. They have learned to cycle, and if there's cycleways within their area, and thank God that's improved. But no, it's a huge, a different story altogether. Mm. If it's motorised, it's motorised. If they're making it legal, it has to be. And parents have to abide by that. I mean, I have grandkids, you know, who might go around the estate in them. And like that, you know, they have to be very careful. You know, they're pulling
they
in driveways.
They won't be allowed to if they're
under
16.
Well, but that's okay. If the rules are there, we'll abide by them. But by the same token, I just think parents have a huge role in this. And I'm not thinking we shouldn't be burdening the Gardaí to enforce it. But, you know, they all have ID cards going into school. So if you can't produce an ID card from your school to say you're over 16, well, then you'll end up in court. Mm-hmm. And you'll be. I would definitely enforce it.
I think the parents will end up in bother. Nicholas, yeah. Is Nicholas Crossan, Councillor Nicholas Crossan, is this, before you talk about your views generally, is this, do you get many representations from the people of Buncrana and surrounds with concerns about e-scooters?
Yes, it has actually come up to at our meetings on a couple of occasions, Greg. One particular occasion is Swan Park, as you well know, that do a bit of canvassing for Buncrana here, a beautiful park on the banks of the Cranner River, recently done up. Tarmac ground, making it very friendly, user-friendly for everybody. But of recent times now, there's these e-scooters has gone up and down the path. People are out for a stroll. Children are in a safe environment, running around the grass and playing. And all of a sudden, this guy comes around the corner on an e-scooter. So we have been asked to put up signage and ban them from Swan Park completely because it's a walking area. On another point, Greg, that I actually followed one of the scooters one day. A guy passed me and I was driving the car. And I followed him going up a hill. And he was doing just under
40 kilometres per hour going up a hill. That's about 25 miles per hour. In an urban area, that is too fast for anybody on a scooter. I have yet to see anybody wearing a helmet on one of these scooters. I have yet to see lights on any of these scooters. So I welcome the regulations. And I have great respect for the Gardaí and the local, the Road Safety Authority, the Minister of Justice, who must bring in these laws. But I would welcome them.
Anything you want to add, Breed?
Yeah, I mean, the law is now in place, but the regulations have yet to be brought in. So my understanding is, in relation to the regulations, that the speed limit is going to be, I think it's either 20 or 25 kilometres an hour. Under 20, the capacity under 20, 25 kilometres an hour, you don't have to be insured and taxed. But 20 to 25 kilometres an hour is actually pretty fast.
It's fast. Yeah.
And recently I was driving and there was a guy on a main road on one of these scooters and he was absolutely flying it. And no helmet. And I actually was afraid for him. I actually thought, Jesus, do I stop and say to this guy, look, you're tipping along there and it's just, and you're on a main road. It just seems to me that there's complete disregard for personal safety sometimes with these. Now, he was on the road rather than the footpath, I'd give him that, but it was a main road. So, look, the regulations are to be welcomed. in relation to helmets, I think it's vital. This business as well of only having one person on an e-scooter. I've seen recently guys taking kids, particularly in around Roscommon Town. I noticed recently guys taking their children with the child sitting on the front of the standing on the front of the e-scooter. Not happy at all with that. I think that's really unstable and unsafe.
Donegal GPs met this week with the Shelter Hospital Group to outline their concerns over the impact services at the hospital are having on their patients. The Shelter Hospital Group has promised that the acute medical unit at Letterkenny University Hospital will be opened by the end of the year. There's some concerns about that, though, about who will staff it and what have you. But anyway, GPs will be able to refer patients directly to it, we're told. But there are other issues which GPs and consultants say that the Shelter reps struggle to come to terms with. And we heard Dr. Padraig McGlynis say that the public need to become more vocal on the issues. Nicholas, I'll start with you. Is that something you agree with?
Well, first of all, I would support every effort that will help to alleviate the pressure on our hospitals. And some people feel, helpless and what they can do to support the people. And if people want to have a protest, I'm fully behind that. They want to say something, maybe just get the frustration off their chest. But I also welcome the meeting with Shilta and the GPs. I'm told that there's a performance management improvement unit that they're carrying out a survey in Letterkenny Hospital over the next 6 weeks. With the look at the alleviation of waiting time, ambulances, support for GPs. And I would like to see the outcome of that there. But I think the GPs in general, we're more or less in favour of this report going ahead and seeing what the outcome for us.
Yeah, okay. I think there's a little bit of pessimism or concern there. What do you think, Breed?
Yeah, God, you'd get fed up listening about reviews and reports, wouldn't you, with the Department of Health and the HSE. I mean, the people on the ground, the GPs and the consultants, they're the people who know exactly what the problem is. And the problem, to me, appears to be the fact that the hospital needs intervention, support and resources. It needs recruitment in relation to doctors. And we're going back again to, do we incentivize doctors to leave Dublin and the East Coast and come and work in Letterkenny? My brother recently was in hospital in Enniskillen. I couldn't get over it. I thought I'd actually landed in a five-star hotel rather than a hospital. There was no queues in A&E, even though it was a busy Friday night. There was a young kid there that was brought in with a broken leg from he was in his football gear, and he was brought in straight away. There was, and I was wondering, where are the trolleys? Where's the A&E? And Enniskillen was absolutely an incredible hospital as far as I was concerned. But the issue here seems to be, you know, encouraging and incentivizing really good consultants and doctors and nurses to work in Letterkenny General Hospital. I've often worried and wondered about the nurses and doctors who are working there, the stress and the strain that they must be under, and the fact that they have such grave concerns that they had to write to the minister who hasn't gone down to visit Letterkenny Hospital, I need hardly say. But at the end of it all, patients are at clinical risk because of the issues. And I don't know whether 6 weeks to complete a report is going to make life any easier for a lady or a gentleman who's sitting on a trolley in Letterkenny.
Yeah, Doreen.
That's my take.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for it.
I think, a lot of what both speakers have said is perfectly right. You know, but the best review that I read this week in relation to the hospital was the letter that my sister sent to me that appeared in the national press from a doctor that fell and how well he was treated. You know, Letterkenny Hospital, it's getting into it that's the problem. It's not the treatment when you get in. It's fantastic.
Well, it is the treatment if you want. And chronology treatment, if you want early access to cancer diagnosis, if you want dermatology.
Yeah, but we can't
services.
Have everything at the end of the day.
But we had them about 6 months ago, and now we've lost them.
Yeah, I know, and I'm fighting in relation to the diabetic people who've lost the services there as well. But, you know, I agree that we do need to be campaigning. Look what happened with the bikes. People protested, and therefore they've got this legislation. So, yes, let there be protests, but as long as it's not used for political gain by.
Well, the only way the protests will be successful, and people don't like me saying it, but I stick to my guns on this, is no, well, it's not if it's not led by any political grouping at all or anyone perceived to be.
Yeah.
We've seen what Dr. Is it Mulholland?
Peter
Mulholland,
yes.
With the turnout for his campaign on the Stroke Unit, for an example. Yeah, it was just people of all political persuasions could join
it. And that's the way it should be. But, you know, I attended an X-ray in the Letterkenny Hub last week and I couldn't believe the facilities. I was in and out the door in 5 minutes and I said to myself, what is going on that this kind of service is not available? And then, I know what it's like. It's a nightmare to go through Letterkenny.
But particularly your constituents, if I can put it like that, Nicholas, you know, we've heard of people in Inishowen being given appointments in Galway, no way of getting there, and having to fork out hundreds upon hundreds of euros for a taxi. That's you can't be disadvantaged purely by geography.
No, 100% agree with that, Greg. But
by the same token, we can't have every service in every county in Ireland. And I know if there's people that have serious illnesses, want the best treatment they can get. Now, to go to for an appointment from Malin Head, we'll take it the furthest point, to Galway or to Dublin. And most of these appointments, I can't believe, are arranged for 11 o'clock in the morning. When it would constitute, if somebody hasn't got a car, an overnight stay in Dublin. So to me, we have to. There's no joined up thinking, because people sitting in an office and say, well, somebody from Johnny Darty from Malin Head wants an appointment in Dublin. Oh, we'll put it down for 9 o'clock.
All right, Nicholas.
If it was 12 o'clock, there's public transport there, at least, if it's not so bad, you know. But,
but there's no bus down in the morning or in the back. Nicholas, thank you very much for your time this morning. I do appreciate
Greg,
it.
Greg, I have to say, I'm sorry, I'm getting terrible feedback even on the phone, it's very difficult to concentrate.
It's okay.
I hope we came across okay.
You did very well, and I do appreciate you bearing with us with the technical side of things. Thank you very much. And Breed, I want to say the same to you as well, by the way, making great articulate points as always, even though we have had slight technical difficulties this morning. I greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Breed Curran there. And last but not least...
Thank you very much.
Doreen Sheridan.
And it's great to be back in the studio. You know, I wasn't in the studio since before COVID. So isn't it wonderful that life has moved on? But let's remember that COVID taught us a lot. Let's not forget the lessons. Mm-hmm. Let's be good and kind to people and be there for them.
All right. God bless you, Doreen.
Thanks
Thank you very much indeed. Back after the news and obituary notices.